in Columbus, watching the Indiana Hoosiers come back from an 18-point second-half deficit to beat the Ohio State Buckeyes. Bloomington South's own Anthony Leal scoring the final 6 points, including the big three-pointer that took a two-point deficit and made it a one-point Indiana lead. The questions outnumber the answers since I've seen you last. The performance against Penn State was, I don't know what that was. And, well, I thought Tuesday would be a barometer of where this was or would be or where the temperature taking of, not the season, but more of just it in general. And I don't know if it answered the question fully, but a team that's down 18 with 17 minutes to go in a game finds a way to win, tells me they haven't quit on the season. So I guess that's good news. But why are you getting down 18 for the second game in a row? That I can't figure out. I'm glad you're here to help me. Good to see you.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Penn State, I don't know. Anthony Leal said something Tuesday night after the game. He said it was another opportunity to learn about winning. And if we accept, you know, and listen, Mike Woodson and his players are the ones who will say, first and foremost, the expectation is the tournament, is competing in the Big Ten, is getting to Final Fours, updating banners on, you know, hanging from rafters, adding more, all that kind of stuff. I appreciate that. But it was never, and you and I had these conversations back in the spring, the summer, the fall, you know, in sort of the range of variance of possible outcomes of this season. This was never an outlier. Now, this is not me trying to reframe the context. Indiana, I think it is fair to say, you know, if we're basing on past performance, Indiana's loss to Penn State closes any today reasonable path to the NCAA tournament. There are unreasonable paths, like winning 7 of their last 8, but sure. We haven't seen Indiana do anything like that this year, so they would need to show us that that was possible before we could consider that a reasonable outcome.
They haven't won 2 in a row in 2024.
This is not me saying people were wrong to expect more of this team or this team was wrong to expect more of itself. It is more me saying this is where this team is right now. And if you want to have an honest and sober conversation about sort of what comes next, then you need to reframe the context of this team, which is, according to Kim Pomeroy, they're the youngest team in the Big Ten. They are clearly limited in some ways, you know, that in terms of maybe offseason roster gambles not paying off. Mike Woodson, it's not unfair of him to point out he's struggled to keep his whole roster healthy, and there have been some bad breaks in there too. It's not like it's all been kind of overwork. I mean, it's guys getting stepped on, it's guys falling awkwardly, that kind of thing. And everybody has to deal with that. And if you can't deal with it, then it usually exposes a weakness somewhere else. But it's still part of the fabric of a season. And if you reframe where Indiana is right now and where Indiana goes from here around that idea of a team that is just learning, trying to learn winning lessons, then it explains, it doesn't necessarily excuse, but it explains a lot more of this. It explains why Indiana can be up double digits 3 times in the first half against Penn State and lose so comprehensively. It explains why Indiana can look so lackluster in the first half at Ohio State and then just completely change its fortunes, you know, in the second half. It explains why, as you said, Indiana can't string 2 wins together in the calendar year. I guess my point is it sort of just thinking about it that way changed my perspective on, like, not necessarily what to expect of this team, but how to evaluate this team in a sort of post, let's say, you know, comfortably off the bubble for the moment world. If that makes sense.
It does, because that's what I talked about on Tuesday. I said the only way – I said if every game is going to be this, that, or the other thing, well, everybody's going to go crazy. So you just have to figure out how to make it work situationally. I don't think there are overarching answers on a week-to-week basis. There were no problems solved on Tuesday night, were there? There were no, you didn't say, oh, well, if we could fix these three things. No, that didn't get fixed. They just found a way to play really well the last 10 minutes and 33 seconds, hold Ohio State to 13 points. Well, why can't they do that every game? Well, because the opponents are different and you're inconsistent. And when you're inconsistent, you get inconsistent performances. And that's what we keep seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's not surprising. It's just there's this overarching belief that by February 6th, everything should be in place.
Yeah, you should have a general idea, right? Go. And that it's not tells you that, again, that's why you kind of need to reframe the context of Indiana season. If you're someone who just says, if they're not going to the tournament, I'm out. Well, then fair enough.
That's happening more and more.
But then just be out. Like the, yeah, you know, don't then
come back in.
Then what are you doing telling me, getting angry in my Twitter mentions every game? You like my point is, you know what this team is and you know where it is. And again, we all said this in the offseason. We said, hey, listen, this team could be more versatile. It could be more athletic. It could be, you know, more dynamic in certain positions. It could also be limited. Doesn't have a lot of shooting. Gonna need, you know, a couple guys to really provide a baseline. Xavier Johnson was probably one of them. And by the way, not a lot of teams get better for losing 80% of their production and two NBA draft picks and four starters and all that they lost. This was always a possible outcome. The point is more about saying they're here now. So if you as a fan or a media member or whatever can reframe the conversation, then you do start to ask different questions. Like, for example, Malik Renew has only scored in double figures twice since December 20, or failed to score in double figures twice since December 21st. One of those was the Iowa game when he gets hurt two and a half minutes in.
Correct.
So that basically doesn't count. There's a whole conversation developing that admittedly I've contributed to about what Trey Galloway's future should look like, because I looked at that performance against Ohio State. I compared it to the Kansas performance. I look at some of his numbers in Big Ten play and I say, you really should be doing more of this, not less. Now that doesn't mean it's going to be this way forever and Trey Galloway is going to score 25 points every single night. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is reminiscent of putting the ball in Victor Oladipo's hands in similar situations at Purdue in early February 2012. It's like, well, hold on. That's different. And the key is now to figure out how to get that guy to play more like that more often, because that's something you didn't have. Mike Woodson talked about the bench today and how he's got to get more out of his bench. And listen, the reality is not all these questions are going to get answered. Not all these problems are going to get solved between now and the end of the season. There's not enough time. And the likelihood is Indiana will fall short of the NCAA tournament. But you start to reframe it around, okay, it did turn out this was a bit of a retooling year. We didn't know if it would be or not. Turned out it was. So now how does Indiana make sure that the retooling pays off and that next year doesn't look like this year and that whatever growing pains Indiana's got to go through this season yield something into next season that gets Indiana back to looking more like it was last season and maybe even higher up than that. And that's tedious for some people, and I get that. And I understand that there's
a society we live in that doesn't work.
Well, and also just forget like the society we live in, instant gratification, social media. You don't want to think about the unnamed opponent on November 8th, 2024. You want to worry about the Purdue game on Saturday night. That's the point. I don't, I'm sitting here trying to soak up all the last wonderful weeks of Jurgen Klopp's tenure at Liverpool. I don't want to sit there and be like, well, what would this manager do in October? I don't care. That's not what I'm here for right now. I'm not here for next year. And I understand anybody else who's not. But for people like you and me and for conversations like this, it does become more about, okay, you know, the phrase Kurt Cignetti loves is, how do we stack good days?
Right.
That's what it becomes about.
Can't be anything else.
And listen, hey, maybe you stack enough good days that you lose to Purdue, but then you win your next three, and there's a couple quad twos in there, and you got some momentum, and you're coming back home, and then you beat Wisconsin, and then it's like, well, they're not there, but they're floating around the edge of it, and you don't know what happens. But it's more kind of this idea that, like, almost shed Indiana of the pressure of prove to us you're an NCAA tournament team and just say, how does this team go about trying to get better? And I think that Tuesday night, and to be fair, in at the opposite end of the poll, Saturday afternoon, both contribute to that conversation in a very different way when it is framed like that. if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, that's where you have to frame it, because let's be brutally honest. Indiana has to win basketball games, and some of them are going to be on the road. So the first question was, well, you don't have any road wins since. Okay, that's taken care of, right? You eliminate that question from what's going on there. And I hear you, but they were down 18. Well, that did happen. You can't just flush that they were down 18 and back to back.
And honestly,
games.
I think that to me is actually more of a reflection of Ohio State. And I know I'm not here to talk about Ohio State, but I look at that Ohio State matchup and they have three scorers, and Indiana has two legitimate perimeter defenders on the floor most of the time. So why, like, to me, it was not surprising Ohio State was up 18. What was surprising was how badly Ohio State lost itself. That Indiana was able to hold him to what you said, 13 points in 10 and a half minutes,
yes,
and come back and win the game.
Two of
you have
from
Bruce
the field.
Thornton, Roddy Gale, Jamison Battle,
who all stunk except Battle at Assembly Hall.
Yeah, but like they were. I mean, Gale started like 6 of 6.
He did.
And Thornton, I mean, you can. I get he's been very up and down, but like you see the point guard he can be. My point is, Ohio State should have one too many for Indiana. I mean, 18 was a bit extreme. I wasn't surprised when Ohio State was playing better than Indiana. Ohio State needed the win. They were
desperate
at home. And I don't necessarily know if Ohio State is pound for pound a better team than Indiana, but I don't think Ohio State's a great matchup for Indiana, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
In the same way that I think that actually this year, unlike in the last couple of years, because Iowa's got fewer shooters, Indiana's a tougher matchup for Iowa, because Iowa's completely overwhelmed by what Indiana can do inside. They didn't have Malik Renew in that game, and they still won it. So sometimes that just happens, and I just thought this is a bad matchup at a bad time for Indiana. And then you saw that, you know, they were missing some decent shots early. You felt like, okay, they're losing their confidence. They're losing whatever swagger they had. But then that second half hit, and, you know, it seemed like sort of the – and I don't – there wasn't like a tone change in the building or something apparent with the team.
Mike Nyes's tweet was great. The first 90 seconds of the second half.
Yeah.
Gave up a three.
The turning point. The turning point of the turning point was that stretch there. From there, it's like Indiana just kind of found some measure of resistance. And there was, a point about probably 4 or 5 minutes later where I was talking to somebody and I just said, this will be a 5-point game at some point, because I can see what's happening to Ohio State. And I can see the difference, because I've seen it both ways. We all have it sometime or another in this business, between a team that's young and flawed but still fighting to try and find something in itself, and a team that is just so fragile that the moment somebody takes one block out of the tower, the whole thing's going to fall.
Jenga.
And Ohio State, you know, and again, these are just kind of feel things. I can't sit here and tell you that Jamison Battle would agree with this or not.
He's 1 for 5 from three. He was 5 for 10 in Bloomington.
But Indiana got it to 9 twice, and Ohio State answered both times. And it almost felt like when Indiana got it under 10 again,
they were out of red.
Ohio State thought, oh no, here we thought, like Ohio State thought it had killed Indiana off 3 times in that game. And when it got to, when it needed a fourth, Ohio State said, oh God, here we go again.
Which was totally opposite of what Indiana did against Penn State. They just, when they went, they never came back.
Yeah, the thing with Penn State, that was also kind of a matchup thing too, because...
Well, we heard that from Mike today. He said, hey, look, man, pick and roll. We tried drop coverage against a team that doesn't make any threes, and they made all the threes against
us. That's part of it. What kept them... Honestly, that's what kept them close. I mean, Indiana could have been up 18, 20 points, and there was a lot of like, oh, Indiana's three-point defense. Like, no, they have the number one three-point defense in the league. Penn State's hitting 26-footers. They shoot 29% as a team. You got to be comfortable with that shot.
Yeah.
But what happens in the second half is Penn State gains a little bit of a head of steam. They got some confidence. And Indiana suddenly looks around and maybe feels some of that same Ohio State. And I think really, probably like schematically, what hurts Indiana in that game, though, is because, and I know Mike Woodson talked about the bench today, too, and feeling like he needs to get those guys more confident and get them going a little bit. Because you're not getting a lot out of that bench, you're sticking with that starting lineup. Malik Renew was clearly not 100%. Penn State went small. And just said, you're scooting on a bad ankle. Let's see if you can stay in front. Let's see if all your switching principles remain and all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, that can happen too. And my point is that's still possible for this team. It will probably happen again this year. But you also should be allowed, if you're Indiana, and you are just thinking about, let's just live day to day. Let's make today better than yesterday and tomorrow better than today and so on. You're still allowed to also look at, Last four games, grinded one out at Illinois, couldn't finish it, but actually maybe the best 40-minute performance of the bunch in terms of there were no wild mood swings.
None at all. They led by seven in that game.
It was back and forth and back and forth. Then you beat Iowa at home in a game that challenged you in a couple different ways. Penn State, yes, played poorly, got what you deserved. Then you went to Ohio State, played poorly, decided you'd had enough, dug your heels in, came back and beat a bad team. So, I mean, it just, like I said, if you reframe this whole conversation around just sort of saying, like, how does Indiana get better from here? Can Indiana get better from here? Because I think that's a relevant sidecar question. And a game like Ohio State.
Purdue's not going to provide that answer.
No, probably not. But if Indiana's down three at the final media timeout, then you got your answer. And that doesn't mean that there's, you know, moral victories or whatever, but it's more kind of like, hey, they came to your place and embarrassed you. Let's be honest. That's what happened in the course of that game. Indiana just got absolutely lapped. If they go up to Purdue and they take Purdue all the way to the wire, they're allowed to at least feel like that was another good day stacked.
And they get 7 days off before Northwestern's here on the 18th.
Yeah.
Again, we didn't think that would happen again. That was a bad job by me not looking at that, because we knew after the Wisconsin game they had 7 days to Illinois, and that was one of their best performances.
Yeah.
Now you get that at home from a big, big week off. So the tough part will be what? Well, we'll get into Purdue when we get back. Because if you go up there and you get beat 95-60, that's different.
No doubt.
Right, but
you're allowed to write it off to an extent, but it doesn't feel, again, it doesn't feel like you progressed.
It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card either to get beat. By your rival, you need to show up. Indiana's 6-6 in the league. They've beaten last-place Michigan, second-to-last-place Ohio State twice. They lost at third-to-last-place Rutgers. They beat fourth-to-last-place Maryland. They lost at home to sixth-to-last-place Penn State. They lost to they beat Iowa. Anyhow, they've played the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, they're also just, like, stuck in that, like, some of the teams under them are under them because Indiana beat them, because there is just this weird, like, morass of, like, 7-5 to 5-7 in the conference right now of basically everybody that's not...
It's 75% of the league.
Yeah, it's everybody that's not Purdue, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Rutgers, or...
Michigan,
thank you.
That's the last one. And Rutgers is 4-7, just right outside.
Right, yeah, like Rutgers just needs to play one more game.
Indiana has beaten Minnesota. They will have another chance with Minnesota. They will also have another chance with Wisconsin, Purdue, Northwestern once, and Michigan State and Maryland. That is it, right? And Penn State. So there are nine games left. So that's
they're 6-6.
There are plenty of
nine guaranteed if you consider the Big Ten,
which tournament. You should, because you will play in that game. That's Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. When we come back, we'll talk Boilermakers. We'll get into Mike Woodson's press conference today as well to make sure you're up to date on all the news that goes on with that. We might even squeeze a Super Bowl projection. Out of the IndyStar.com's beat writer for Indiana basketball and football. Kurt Cignetti met the media earlier. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit tomorrow. I think there was a couple interesting things there, because no one's ever seen him run a spring ball around here. So that schedule and how we're going to put it together and the roster management, we'll do that tomorrow for you. We'll focus on the – we'll get you a we'll go Purdue heavy tomorrow in football, and we'll get to the basketball and the Super Bowl today. 5:36, it's Glass in the Afternoon. It's the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. They're ready for the big game on Sunday with their 80 domestic craft and imported beers, plus hundreds of rare end and high-end whiskey and tequila sitting on that gorgeous back bar. The Crazy Horse Tavern, open daily at 11 a.m. for lunch, dinner, or late night. Diane Daly's news headlines are next. A busy Thursday will roll on when we complete action here in 20 minutes. Your Money with David Hayes at 6. Pacers Golden State at 7. Pacers have been very, very busy today. Buddy Hield is no longer in the blue and the gold. Doug McDermott, the former Pacer, is, and so is Kirk Motz from Philly. There's a lot of other things that happened, but I don't have 10 more minutes to rehash it all. Rick Carlisle will meet with the media before the game, as he probably has already. Follow Dustin Dupirak at Dustin Dupirak on the Twitterverse. He will keep you updated on all of those things. If you're interested in money and rosters and what's left out of it, we'll see. I don't know why you get rid of Buddy Hield on expiring just to cobble up $6 million in a second-round pick, but it is an asset-driven market. You got to have tangibility. You got to have things to move, especially when you're the Pacers, because free agents just don't come running to your front door. You got to have stuff to move around. And, again, Buddy Hield was not having his best year. So anybody that dresses it up as he was, did the Pacers get better? That's a great question. Ask me in a month, because nobody knows right now. It's great sports talk fodder, but nobody knows. Nobody knows right now how this works. Maybe getting Buddy out of the rotation makes the Pacers better. He doesn't guard anybody. I ain't going to be fair here. Well, it's not what it's all about, but that's what it should be about. Osterman is here in the studio, Indiana, the Pacers, the Hoosiers, well, the Colts. We'll do all of it with him, but he's the basketball man, so we're focusing on the hoops today. We know that Purdue is the opponent on the weekend. We will get into the Purdue of how and why and all of that. And now Indiana will not play after Purdue until – I think I have that right. I've looked it up three times because I didn't think they'd get two big breaks like this again. They will play.
It's because of the calendar. It's because we talked about this once.
Right.
Everything's like pushed back a week this year because the first full Sunday to Saturday week of January was as late as it could possibly be. The first day of the year was a Monday, which means the first full week on the calendar, if you go Sunday to Saturday, which the Big Ten, which college basketball would do because your tournaments are on the weekends.
Sure.
The first full week of the year came as late as it possibly could.
That is why. So Indiana will have, again, another seven-day break between games. They play Saturday at Mackey, and then they will play the 18th, a week from Super Bowl Sunday, at home against Northwestern at 3 o'clock game. That's a little bit better time. That gets you a little bit more active crowd. But the residue in the last week of games, Tuesday to Tuesday, Indiana won 2 out of 3. And if you would have told me beforehand they would have won 2 out of 3, guess which one I would have told you they would have lost? It would have been Ohio State on Tuesday. It wouldn't have been the other way around. But we just all have to take a deep breath because Tuesday, the final Tuesday of January, Indiana led Iowa by 17, then trailed. Iowa came back. It was 56-53, 7:58 to go in the second half, and Indiana found a way to win. Indiana led three times by double digits in the first half against Penn State and couldn't hold it. And to see it coming straight at you, Indiana, their last biggest lead was 11 with 5 minutes to go in the first half. They led by 4, and then with 16 something to go in the second half, they were not leading anymore. It always bothers me at home when you don't. Again, Penn State didn't hit a 20-point shot where you went from it's tied to we're down 20. It didn't happen that way. But there was no fire extinguishing that day. There was nothing to stop the rot. And you have this lost feeling. And then on Tuesday, there they are, down 18 again, another technical foul. Just all the things come crashing and cascading down. Did you think it was going to be their defense that saved them? Because that's what it was. 13 points in the last 10 and a half minutes.
Yes, to some extent, because when you're down double digits on the road.
You're like, not going to make 18 threes.
Right. And honestly, I said this, I think on our postgame video it was good for Indiana that they didn't just have some stretch where they hit 4 threes.
I said exactly the same thing.
It wasn't,
or they made 8 of 9 or something stupid that you can't replicate.
They didn't shoot 44 free throws. Paul Zelk didn't just go nuts. There was nothing freakish that just sort of reset the game. Again, if anything,
they were 21 of 31 at the line.
They pushed it inside double digits or inside single digits twice. And got rebuffed both times and then came back a third time. And, listen, maybe this game is a turning point for Indiana. Maybe they win 6 of their last 8.
We'll let you know in a couple weeks.
Which would get them to 20 wins, 12-8 in the Big Ten.
Top 4 seed probably.
Somewhere, five, I mean, yeah, top close. 4, top 5. Probably still on the outside looking into the tournament. But you'd at least feel like, you'd at least feel like there was sort of something salvaged from this season, if you understand what I'm saying. You would at least feel like there was sort of progress and a path forward.
You were right. It was the fourth time.
It was the fourth time.
That they finally caved. They couldn't do it.
Yeah. So it just kind of like,
6:34 to go. They got to 7.
Maybe this is a turning point. What seems more likely to me is it is a positive step forward that isn't necessarily guaranteed to be followed purely by other positive steps forward. But if you're Indiana, what you're trying to do is you know, get yourself to a place where you have more consistency. You've got to be able to take the good from this game and, you know, let that be your, guide. Yeah, I mean, that's
it's true. It's absolutely true.
And listen, this is the journey young teams go on. I mean, it just is there was a stretch there in college basketball where young teams are going to the Final Four a lot. That stopped. Because the portal has, and you know, everybody's got their own formula for NIL in the portal, and obviously Indiana's had to remake its roster once through the portal and has not been super successful thus far. Some individuals have, and they haven't been a dramatic failure, but they haven't lived up to their own collective expectations. So it's fair to say last year's portal window was probably an incomplete one for Indiana. But the problem you have is just in general, young teams struggle because in the big conferences where there's a lot of NIL money, teams don't tend to be young very often because they can go get Marcus Damask or they can go get Jameson Battle. Or they can go, Battle's not a great example because he transferred Big Ten to Big Ten, but they can go get players that fill the gaps that keep them old and elevate their experience and their leadership. You just got to do it right. And Indiana wound up in a situation where it just kind of its roster busted too much from last season for it to ultimately be able to execute a plan that got it back to where it needed to.
This year. Was never so happy to see as many foul shots. In the second half, and Ohio State made 12 of 14, but you know what that meant? They didn't hit a three. that matters when you're trying to chase games, and Indiana just doesn't shoot the ball very well. And that's that didn't get solved. Indiana shot the ball percentage-wise fine, but when they made five threes and only gave up five threes, well, they weren't in that minus 21, that minus 18, that minus 24 that has killed them so many
times. And it wasn't like Ohio State was missing a lot of open ones. They got a couple.
Couple blown coverages. Those are the only ones they made.
But it wasn't a game. We've seen this with Indiana in recent years where, the other team doesn't shoot well from three, but it's basically just because they were cold one night. They defended well, especially after, Ohio State kind of got loose there a little bit in the first half. They locked. I thought Ohio State. I mean, again, we're talking about Indiana. I thought Ohio State got really Roddy Gale happy in the second half, and I thought Indiana was happy to let them do it. Because I think
he was 1 for 5.
Because I think Indiana felt like
Thornton was 1 for 6. Battle was 2 for 7 in the second half. That's the recipe.
And I think Indiana felt like Gale, number one,
he had 5 turnovers.
There's going to be a little bit of regression to the mean. He started like 6 of 6 or 5 of 5 or something.
He was definitely 5 of 5.
Number two, he's not a creator for others, and he was trying to be. And he just kept diving under the basket.
Put his head down, right?
And just sort of like, okay, you look up and where's the ball going now? And then there's another empty possession. And then Indiana went down and scored again. And then there's another empty possession. And suddenly McKenzie and Bacco made both. Oh, they never hit free throws. But he made both. It's only 5 now. And half this crowd, there were probably 7,000-8,000 people there, I guess, at least.
The number
1,500 was probably Indiana fans, and I'm not trying to be flippant, but you probably had a lot of Ohio State fans in there that were a little bit conflicted about what they wanted the result to be because of just the way things have gone the last couple of years. So it was also interesting to me. Anthony Leo basically said we thought they'd crack.
They led by 9 in Bloomington. Yeah, they already saw it firsthand.
And like these guys aren't ignorant. They can see Ohio State's lost whatever games in a row, and the season's doing this, and everything goes the way it goes, and they can feel the energy in the building. It's funny. There was a fan near us that just kept screaming, "Play some defense!" And I remember looking I can't remember the man or woman, but looking in that general direction, and when Indiana was 4 of 16 to start the game, I was like, well, they are. Like, you're okay. But, at the end of the game, that fan was sort of borne out for their lack of trust. Because, it was a building. We've seen Assembly Hall this way in recent years. It was a building that had very little faith in its team.
And you could see why.
Even at 15, 18 points. And once Indiana pulled them back, I think Indiana could feel that. And, again, that's another positive.
They blow a huge lead against Rutgers there?
Yeah, but they won the game, didn't they?
Right.
Yeah, but that was last,
was like 20, though.
Wasn't that last year? Because that was like it was a really controversial call at the end of the game.
Right.
I think it was last year.
But this has happened before, is your greater point.
Yeah.
This and it happens in that
building. And it's a lot of these, Thornton, Key, You know, a couple other dudes. I mean, you know, Felix Okpara. I mean, I don't really know what
Ohio Khalil Ware grabbed one rebound in 26 minutes. Gabe Cupps played 26 minutes and had 2 points. If I'd have told you that before the game started, there's no way we could extrapolate a victory. That did show me something, because Indiana did not have to play perfectly. They did not have to make 10 threes, 15 threes, whatever. So what they did was kind of replicable moving forward. But you can't get down to Purdue 18. We've tried that.
It's less that it's replicable, because every game is different. Every game is going to take on its
own
sort of
life. But the effort part, we've always, you know, we came out flat.
It's more that Indiana got to see its formula work.
All right, yeah.
Like you think about these as learning experiences. That's why you get paid the big opportunity to learn about winning. If you think about it through that lens, Indiana saw its own process work on the road. Still a quad one win, at least for now, against a team that was up 18 points. And Indiana said, we're just going to keep grinding. We're going to keep fighting. It was very reminiscent of those.
They were not minus 22 on the glass, I noticed.
The Big Ten tournament games, particularly that Michigan game in Woodson's first year, where Indiana just kind of kept coming. You remember that game?
Yeah.
And it was just, and Michigan was up double digits, I think, at halftime. They certainly were up double digits at one point in the first half. And Indiana just kept saying, like, okay, fine.
That was a pick and roll game, wasn't it?
And it was another game. Yeah, it was another game where Woodson did what he did in this game, which is he found a lineup and he just said, we're just staying there. This works. They can't figure it out. Until they figure it out, we're just going to keep doing it. And, you know,
till our eyes bleed. That's right.
Yeah. And I mean, again, is that something you can repeat if you're Indiana? This is actually in a weird way, like, I think Indiana's actually played a lot of teams at good times relative to its own schedule this season. This is probably a bad time to play Purdue, because you would want to feel that. Like, I bet if Indiana played Penn State at home on Saturday night, they'd win, and they'd have that, okay, this isn't a quad one or a quad two, but like, We strung a couple wins together.
Right.
We did some good stuff. We kept doing good stuff. It built on it. Look where we wound up. But, you know, schedule is what it is.
More of what I can take from the game is, hey, look, you didn't get beat 22 on the glass this time.
Mm-hmm.
You won the rebounding. Rebounding's effort. We always talk about that. Effort is tangible.
Little turnover issues, but, like, I mean, you know.
Turnovers are 11 for Indiana, 12 to Ohio State. Points off.
It's points off that got them.
Minus 10.
Ohio State converted a ton, but.
Fast break points, didn't give up.
Mike Woodson says after the game, you know, we got killed on the glass in the first game. So we're going to – one of the emphases in this game was we do not get killed on the glass. And they didn't.
The interesting point of today's message, first thing, we'll talk about it more tomorrow with Purdue since we're running out of time here today. Where is Khalil Ware on the injury clock? Well, that's the most famous answer going around when we talk about Indiana basketball.
We'll see. We'll work out later today. I think he gave the same answer for Malik Renew and Xavier Johnson after their injuries against Iowa, and one has played both games since. The other is out indefinitely and doubtful, and there's absolutely no timetable on when he might return, so...
That is interesting, because he was asked to clarify that doubtfulness. He was asked specifically, do you mean for next game, this year? And he just said, he's doubtful.
Well, but then we got the update, out indefinitely.
Right.
So.
Out indefinitely, definitely.
Indefinitely doubtful.
Well, that's the whole thing. We didn't know when Khalil Ware would be back.
The thing is, there's not a ton of time left in the season.
There's not.
I mean, there's, you know, they play
eight games.
They play Michigan State
February 10th,
March 10th,
or March 10th. Sorry.
So they play what? They have Purdue. What is
Northwestern?
Purdue is February 10th, right?
Correct.
And
1 month.
Michigan State is March 10th. So that's like, you know, they enter the final month of their season Saturday night.
There's not
a lot of time left.
And we all thought when Malik Renew got hurt in the first 3 minutes against Iowa that, the writing could be on the wall at that point. It wasn't. Indiana has battled their way. And they will get the ultimate test in the Big Ten, the Boilermakers, their old rival. 8 o'clock, Fox on Saturday. Osterman's back tomorrow. We'll get into Purdue specifically. Mike Woodson had interesting comments about how the game was officiated last time. I don't think you're going to get any breaks with another technical foul, and I don't think you're going to get any breaks at Mackey. Other than that, you're just going to have to get out there and play. We'll talk about keys to the Purdue game, and we'll get into a little bit of Indiana football as well. David Hayes, your money is next. Golden State Pacers tonight. Well, The Warriors are wrapping up a five-game roadie. The Pacers are playing their final home game before their three-game road trip before the All-Star game next weekend. Mark Boyle will have the coverage starting at 7, and we will be back. Big Show Friday. Joe joins us tomorrow for the first hour. Join us tomorrow, and Osterman's back tomorrow as well. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour on a Thursday night is over. Your money is next.